I got the great pleasure and privilege to welcome everybody here tonight to the evening with Tadeusz Różewicz, who some of you, I'm sure, will remember, has been here already at Warwick University. The first time, it was over 10 years ago, in fact, 11 and a half years ago, in 1989, he came to the conference which took place at Warwick, which was called, if I remember correctly, Under Eastern Western Eyes. And it happened, obviously, at the important historical moment after the fall of the Berlin Wall, and a number of intellectuals from Poland were invited to that conference. At that time, Tadeusz gave not a poetic reading, but everybody was requested to talk and to comment on the changes that were going to happen in that part of the world after the great political change. And those who were here, and I know that some of you were at that event, will remember that Tadeusz was quite skeptical, and he warned us against expecting a great emergence of new forms, new artistic achievements. He also was quite cautious and warned against some evils that can actually arrive with the new political system. I think he was trying to tell us that we should be cautious in embracing the new free market capitalism. And at that time, he was quite enthusiastically greeted by the students of Warwick. Well, today I asked him, 10, 11 years later, could you please tell me what your view on the situation is now? And he just gave me a simple answer saying, well, there has not been a single novel, there has not been a single play about that most heroic time, about the fall of the Berlin Wall. There were some plays written about it before the actual wall, but actually no artistic fruition has come from that particular historical event. So that is the situation of art and whatever we expected could come out of this huge political sense has not yet happened. More than that, it has not yet been, so to speak, digested by art to be able for us to receive some kind of fruition, some kind of interpretation, some kind of commentary on what happened at that time. At the moment, we're obviously still in the phase of the political and material changes in that part of the world. Tadeusz was present here once before, after 1989, and that was in 1999 when there was a reading announced and advertised, the audience were invited, and when they actually came to the theater, they had to accept the fact that Tadeusz was here, but virtually, not materially, because unfortunately his health did not allow him to travel at the time, and he had to cancel his visit at the last minute in 1999. But he told us, there is no reason you should stop the reading only because the poet is not there. Who wants to see the poet anyway? It's because he's very, very modest. Well, we did our best, and we produced a multimedia event. I don't know if some of you were here at that time. It was a multimedia event. We had a video screen. We had a telephone message. We had Tadeusz reading here, but it was all thanks to the multimedia suite that had been installed here since 1989. So that's probably the biggest technological revolution that happened after the fall of the Berlin Wall, that we can have virtual poets now and virtual sort of real readings with a virtual presence of a poet. And that was a very successful reading, which actually was attended by publishers, and they are here tonight with us as well, the ARC publishers sitting at the back of the room. And as the result of that virtual meeting with a poet, they actually offered to publish a book of the new poetry of Tadeusz Różewicz, because what is so extraordinary about this poet is that in the last decade, so again, since 1989, he has been an extremely prolific writer. In fact, he has published more than one book a year since 1989. So perhaps there has been some effect of the political change after all. And as a result of that, we have felt compelled to apply our work and a bit of talent, I hope, in translation. When I say we, I mean Tony Howard, who is my co-translator, without whom this book would never have happened, but unfortunately he can't be here today. And this book came out just in time for Tadeusz's arrival from Poland last week. And this is the story of the poet and Warwick. And today we are here together in a very material way, and we're going to read for you. And we also have David Morley present here, who, again, thank you very much for organizing, because you have actually organized the event as this, made it possible for tonight. And David will help us read the English versions. Because we believe there is a majority of English audience here, we'll start our reading of the English version, and then Tadeusz will read in Polish. The first poem we're going to read is called Mirror. Mirror. After years of noise, unnecessary questions and answers, silence enfolds me. Silence is my poem's mirror. Their reflections say nothing. Rembrandt swaddled in old age, toothless, chews me, chuckling, exhibited in the Wallraff Museum. Why didn't you become a mute painter, a Nikifor Krynicki? Lines ravaged by time delineate our common face. The face I see now, I saw at the start, but I did not foresee this. The young living mirror hid it. Blackened now, lifeless, dying, without reflection, light, breath. Could we have some more light, please?
Yes. Zwierciadło. Po latach zgiełku, niepotrzebnych pytań i odpowiedzi, otoczyła mnie cisza. Cisza jest zwierciadłem moich wierszy, ich odbicia milczą. Rembrandt w powijakach starości, bezzębny, przeżuwa mnie, śmieje się, odsłonięty w Wallraff Muzeum. Czemu nie zostałeś niemową, malarzem, Nikiforem? Wyniszczone przez czas rysy rysują naszą wspólną twarz. Twarz, którą widzę teraz, widziałem na początku, ale jej nie przewidziałem. Lustro ukryło ją w sobie, żywe, młode, teraz poczerniałe, martwe, umiera bez odbicia światła oddechu.
The next poem as a title has three asterisks. My short poem sometimes elongates, drags, slips from my grip, so I trim it, usually at the bottom, rarely the top, because the top is all light, sky, clouds. They problems endings. A poem doesn't want to end. It keeps going. Bores, stalls, multiplies words, puts the end off. What can one do with the end? Drown it in darkness like Selang, or tie it up in a bow, pretty as a butterfly, or bring it to a point and leave it as bait?
Mój krótki wiersz czasem wydłuża się, dłuży, wymyka spod ręki, więc go przycinam przeważnie u dołu, rzadziej od góry, bo w górze jest światło, jest niebo, są chmury, są kłopoty z końcem. Wiersz nie chce się kończyć, ciągnie się dalej, nudzi, marudzi, mnoży słowa, swój koniec odwleka. Co zrobić z tym końcem? Utopić go w ciemności na modłę Celana albo w kokardkę zawiązać, piękną jak motylek, albo w puentę i tak zostawić na przynętę.
Well, this poem about a short poem, about trying to make a poem shorter, precedes the main section of the book, which is called Recycling. And this, I'm afraid, is a very long poem, and we won't be able to read it. And in fact, Tadeusz does think about the length of the poem while writing it, and I'm just going to quote a few lines from the poem to explain something to you. It's a postscriptum to the second part of Recycling. What a long poem! It drags and drags, master, don't you get bored? Can't it all fit into a haiku? It can't. No, it can't, and you will know why it can't once you've read it. Just for the sake of information, we want to let you know that actually that full poem, Recycling, will be read at the Riverside Studio on Sunday at 4 o'clock. So if any of you happen to be in London or don't have anything to do with the Sunday, please come down and join us for the... It's a dramatized reading by actors. It has three parts, fashion, gold, and meat. And I will leave out the first two parts, and I will read you an excerpt from Meat. But before I do this, I would just like to read you the very end of the poem, which is a kind of explanation of the form, because in Recycling, Tadeusz Różewicz creates a new form, or tackles with a new form, and he tells us at the end of the poem, in a postscriptum, Recycling is in three parts, one fashion, two gold, three meat. If gold still takes the form of a long poem, fashion and meat belong in a genre of virtual poetry. Formally, part three, meat, is a rubbish dump, information dump, with no center, no core. The deliberate sterility and the lack of an exit point became the work's main building blocks. The madness of a man with CJD comes from an animal's sick brain. BSE turns against man. The criminal non-morality of science mingles with politics, the economy, and the stock exchange. The circle closes. Neither conscience nor sanity is the guarantee that we shan't mass-produce human bodies and animal forms stripped of what we call the soul. Everything can fit into the human brain. Prions, quantums, gods and demons. The question asked by philosophers and ordinary people, unde malum, where does evil come from, finds an answer, perhaps a pessimistic and unpleasant one for man. So I hope this gives you, this intrigues you enough to turn to open the book and read the whole poem. So let me just give you a very short sample from Meat, because especially in this country, I think we are extremely concerned and preoccupied with the idea. Meat. Mad beef. Mad cow disease. Madness on the bone. New beef scandal. Gefahr auf dem Teller. Die Abkehr von Steak und Braten. Mad cows in Hong Kong. Swine fever in tulip country. BSE. Bovine spongiform encephalopathy. After a 2-hour session in Downing Street, in the presence of Prime Minister J. Major, London suspends its slaughter program. The English minister for something or other recommends, just before the election, the roast beef, hamburgers and steak. TV and the papers are full of pictures of the minister consuming English beef with his whole family. Everyone laughs and looks healthy. All happy families are alike, Leo Tolstoy one day noticed, and gave up meat. Paris expressed regret at the unilateral decision by London. The Blair government's going to ban beef on the bone. Soon ribs and bony chops will be taken off the shelves. Does it mean we should stop eating beef altogether? Ask desperate consumers. In Wales, there are violent protests against cheap Irish beef, allegedly safe, flooding the market. English farmers have attacked Irish lorries and dumped several tons of beef in the sea. A report suggests the mad cow disease carriers in the nervous system, prions, cause Creutzfeldt-Jakob's disease in people. They are also present in nerve fibers around cow's bones. Paris expressed regret. While in Great Britain, the BSE and CJD epidemics will peak in 7 years, most at risk are the beef eaters who stuffed themselves in the late 80s with hamburgers partly produced from brains, bone marrow, and other bits of cow's nervous system. Between 1986, when the disease was discovered, and 1989, the British public consumed the meat of approximately 446,000 infected animals. The English minister laughs. The German minister can't decide to eat or not to eat beef. The Danish agriculture minister, Henrik Dam Kristensen, recalled that the European Union signed a clear agreement concerning the slaughter program. Minister Kristensen warned the London government not to exploit the disease cow question in the election. The head of the German diplomatic service, Klaus Kinkel, found the decision unacceptable. The situation is very serious, said Russian Deputy Premier and Agriculture Minister Viktor Huston. The Russian government announced that 730 tons of British beef, covered by the total export ban, were exported to Russia via Belgium. The European Commission has published an inspection report revealing the illegal export to Spain, France, and Holland of 1,600 tons of British beef. Paris expressed regret at the unilateral decision by London. And it goes on, gets more and more interesting. What is important to know about the form of this poem is that at the time when Tadeusz wrote it, it was about BSE, and he told me that this poem doesn't end, it goes on, it writes itself every day. And obviously now with the foot and mouth disease, it's like the second part of the poem has been written. I remember he also showed me an excerpt, a cutting from the newspaper, reading it to me and saying, look, they are quoting my poem. Because this is about language, how language exploits or conceals the truth and exploits political situation. So that was just a taste of the cycle.
Przed wielu laty, zanim Recycling napisałem, pisałem poemat pod tytułem Siniebicie. I to był chyba pierwszy utwór liryczny w ogóle. Siniebicie, bardzo specyficzny polski obyczaj, gdzie po tym jest również uczta, jedzenie i tak dalej, i tak dalej. ale to dotyczyło moich rozmów z moim przyjacielem, wielkim polskim malarzem, który był no takim, co je te trawę, brokuły, czy ten
wegetarianinem.
I on oczywiście nie jadł, ja jadłem, mimo że pisałem współczująco o świniach, które oddawały w tym czasie swoje serca, prawda?
Okay. In fact, many, many years ago, I wrote a poem which was called Swine's Slaughter, Świnobicie, Swine's Slaughter, could translate in such a way. It was about an old Polish custom where swine slaughter was almost ritual, and that was followed by a feast. And I was talking to a friend of mine, a painter, who was a vegetarian. I am not a vegetarian. I ate the meat. But at the same time, I was full of compassion for the living creature whose heart and all the other parts were consumed.
I próbowałem tam wyrazić również tragedię świń, prawda? Próbowałem psychologię tych zwierząt opisać. Świń, które się boją już w czasie transportu, a przed przejściem do tej komory, gdzie są zabijane, często dostają zawału serca i tak dalej, należą do bardzo wrażliwych stworzeń, o czym świadczą świnki, na przykład domowe, hodowane, małe, które przywiązują się podobnie jak psy do ludzi, prawda? I poemat ten zakończyłem po prostu wezwaniem, że świnią już się należy pomnik, prawda?
I try to explore the tragedy of swines in that poem, to explore the psychology, to analyze the fear that they experienced before getting into the slaughterhouse. Very often they died before the slaughter from a heart attack, because swines are sensitive animals. They are like dogs. They get used to people. And that's what the poem was about.
Myślę o dramacie ludzi i dramacie zwierząt równocześnie, prawda? Te dymy, które z tych palonych stad idą do nieba, są podobne do tych, które szły z innych zupełnie miejsc. Myślę, aż do tej pory, tylko chciałem zwrócić uwagę na to, że poeta może wyrazić uczucia ludzi, prawda? Natomiast nie ma takiego woła, który by wiersze pisał na ten temat.
Yes,
I
wanted to express the drama of people, but also the drama of the animals who die in fire, and the smoke goes to the sky just like the smoke from people being burned in totally different circumstances. The poet can deal and express the feelings or suffering of people, but no cow can write a poem about its like. David is going to read a poem called The Hyperactive Family. And just before he starts, I would just like to give you a little anecdote. This poem, when translated into Swedish, was published in an actual professional medical magazine, because the editor of that magazine, a doctor, decided that it accurately defined the psychological condition of the modern family.
The Hyperactive Family. Voice from Black Box. This is Radio Dribble. One hyperactive child's not that bad, but three hyperactive kiddies are just a parenting nightmare. The word parenting's fashionable now. A parenting person may be a father or a mother. Heaven help me, I can't take this child anywhere. The child ruins everything. What can I do? There's a medicine, Ritalin. I'm calling because I'm the granddad of a hyperactive child. It's regarding my grandson. His intelligence quotient is 144. If he's 12 now, what should we expect next year? He says, "Turn off the TV, Grandma, or I'll chuck your books out." His mummy is a psychologist, but for adults, unfortunately, so what can we do? In our parliament, we have hyperactive members. They never stop wriggling. They read the papers, raise a hand, drop a leg, exit pursuing a bar, the hard stuff, enter pursuing a court to denounce themselves. They hide in the toilet, thus creating a government crisis. "Excuse me, is that Radio Dribble? I have this child, right? He's 10. When it gets dark, he's off, he's violent, can't sit still for a moment. Sometimes the aggression's so bad he'll do anything and it gets on the teacher's nerves. Why not try a child psychiatrist? But listen, these kids never stop moving. Well, actually, it's not my children who are hyperactive, it's my husband. All these hyperactive children, where do they come from? If a pregnant mother listens to aggressive music, the baby will be hyperactive. If I visit friends, I'm back within the hour because my child vanishes under the Christmas tree, breaks a ball. I'm teaching him a poem. Ah, listen, perhaps this is too soon for poetry. Perhaps it's the preservatives and the food. A child could start doing poems in his pants, then it's too late. Hello, I'm an uncle. One girl and one boy. The girl can't concentrate, the boy can't either. Into the barracks?" The Ministry of Defence plans to call up 6,000 conscripts with degrees. The conscripts become hyperactive. The hyperactive conscripts run to psychiatrists, sexologists. Psychologists go down with barrack phobia involving fixation and diarrhea. They don't just play dumb, they play crazy. My nephew always liked rifles, pistols, bows, tanks. As a youngster, he used to wear uniforms, American and German army surplus, usually looked like a parachute trooper. But when the conscription board called him up, he contracted psychological and actual fallen archers, refused to wash his teeth, feet, begged his parents to talk to a neighbor who knew a doctor in a psychiatric hospital. Domestic hell. The boy turned green from fright. Finally, he volunteered to escape to Gran, who lives in Canada. I'm a desperate Gran. My grandson got upset and started shooting. He killed 12 people, including his parents. I'm a desperate Gran because they put my grandson in juvenile detention without his breakfast. I'm 7 and my name's Wilder. My granddad sticks his nose in everything I do. Granny too. Yesterday was Grandmother's Day. And she never stopped talking. And worse than that, today's Children's Day. So everybody's rushing about and picking up things. And they keep asking me, where children come from. Grandad's glued to the mirror, pulling funny faces. Grandad sticks his hat on his head, pulls it off, puts on his veteran's cap, salutes, stands up, then looks at his medal, does sit-ups, says he's vetting himself. He says, we've got a coat of arms, and draws a rapier in my school book, and a horse's tail, and two horns, and one tree, gena genia, logical. He runs around the room and farts if he thinks he's alone. Hello, is that Radio Dribble? I have a little granddaughter, age 6, used to be an absolute angel, but this morning she kicked me on my knee, begged pardon my ankle, and said, Granny can kiss her on the I'm at the end of my tether and have become hyperactive. My boyfriend says he'll tear her to bits. Our grannies and their herb tea. The tannins in tea affect women adversely during pregnancy because... But herb tea is splendid specific to in larger quantities. It might have a negative effect. So the herb tea that our grannies... is a splendid specific warning. The government's chief vet warns against consuming pork and pâté from the French company Merci Beaucoup. The bacteria Listeria causes listerosis. Misterosis, Merci Beaucoup, has caused the decease of 2 people in the European Union. 22nd of January, 2000, Saturday. Grandfather's Day is ending. Is that Radio Dribble? My granddad's really lovely, but he can't sit still. He keeps running to the bathroom or the kitchen When my granddad does sit down, he never stops moving. Granddad's all over the place. He jiggles things about. I'm calling your station, miss, because even though I'm only six, I'm so worried about my granddad. He has to touch everything and says this. In my days, children were different.
Okay, so these, as you can see, are quite long poems, and I'm going to read you one more, which is called Simultaneous Poem, and this is a very, it's constructed in a very interesting way. It is like a film script. It contains movement. The central idea of the poem is that there are two characters who start the journey at completely two different places on Earth, in different countries, and they travel. They are totally different individuals. One of them is a criminal and a cook. The other one is called Winkelmann, an art historian, mixing in very upper circles, royal circles, cardinal circles. They both start a journey from two different places, and they meet at some point. They meet in an inn. They get to stay in rooms which are next to each other. And what happens is that one is murdered by the other. That is what interested Tadeusz, to construe a poem which is based on a real historical event, and to think about how time works and perhaps fate works in a certain way, how paths can cross and result in a in the ending of somebody's life.
Poemat równoczesny, Herder, und ach, Winkelmann ist nicht mehr. Arkangeli myślał, że zaszlachtował luteranina, Żyda albo szpiega, więc nie miał wyrzutów sumienia. Casanova poznał Winkelmana w Rzymie w roku 1760. Po kolacji wszyscy byli rozbawieni. Uczony wywijał koziołki z dzieciakami malarza Mengsa. Dnia 14 maja 1767 roku arcyksiąże Leopold ogłosił amnestię jednym z przestępców wypuszczonych na wolność był Arkangeli, urodzony w okolicach Pistoi, karany za kradzież, pomocnik kucharza, wzrost średni, twarz okrągła, cera oliwkowa, dzioby po ospie, włosy czarne, brwi gęste, czarne, nos mały, czoło niskie, wymowa szybka, bełkotliwa, wiek 38 lat, wyznanie rzymskokatolickie, żonaty. To jest początek. No, trzeba to przeczytać. Myślę, że dalej trzeba. Tak.
Simultaneous poem. Herder. Und ach, Winkelmann ist nicht mehr. Arkangeli thought he'd carved up a Lutheran, a Jew, or a spy. So he felt no qualms of conscience. Casanova met Winkelmann in Rome in 1760. After supper, everyone was in high spirits. The scholar capered with the children of Mengs, the painter. On the 14th of May, 1767, Archduke Leopold proclaimed an amnesty. One of the criminals set free was Arcangeli. Born near Pistoia, convicted of theft, a kitchen hand, height medium, face round, skin olive, pockmarked, hair black, eyebrows thick black, Nose small. Forehead low. Speech quick mumbled. Age 38. Religion Roman Catholic. Married. The sculptor, Bartolomeo Cavacceppi, set off from Rome for Germany with Abbe Winckelmann on the 10th of April, 1768. The route passed through Bologna, Venice, Verona. The route passed through the Alps, through the Tyrol. Winckelmann's face fell, changed. When I pointed it out, he answered in a pathetic tone. Look at these dreadful surroundings, the dreadful sky, mountains, climate, people. What architecture! The steep roofs on the houses, dreadful! Architecture is music, gefrorene Musik, said Goethe. I must go back immediately, he announced in Regensburg. I know that only Rome can give me happiness. Meanwhile, in Berlin, Vienna, Munich, they were preparing triumphal gates. To Trieste, faster, faster, the first ship to Ancona, anything to get nearer Rome. With the blood drained from his face, eyes dimmed, he whispered, I know what I am doing is wrong, but I can do no other. Meine Gesellschaft sind die alten Griechen, he used to say at home, in the palace of Cardinal Alessandro Albani. In the first days of June 1768, in Trieste, Winckelmann stopped at an inn in room number 10, two windows overlooking the harbor. Next door, in small dark room number 9, some fellow had been staying for 2 days. He had come from Venice, probably on foot, with no luggage or money, with worn-out old clothes, thick black eyebrows, small nose, face pitted by pockmarks. The neighbors soon became close companions. Winckelmann capered with Mengs's children, recalls the amused Casanova. Still amused, he tells how he almost caught Winckelmann W and a young servant red-handed. One was buttoning his fly, the other adjusting his clothes. On the 7th of June, Arcangeli bought a sheath knife for 9 groschen and later a strong plaited rope for 3 soldos. He thought he'd carved up a Lutheran, a Jew, or a spy, so he felt no qualms of conscience. With the murder weapons hidden in his pockets, he went for breakfast. He returned to the inn, made a halter of the rope, tied the noose, dropped into the cafe where he had a coffee on Winckelmann. Later, they talked of a ship to Venice, of gold and silver coins. In court, Arcangeli said an evil spirit was responsible for his deed. Personally, he thought he'd carved up a Lutheran, a Jew or a spy, so he felt no qualms of conscience.
When I was 21 years old and just starting out, semi-leaving the sciences and starting to write for the first time in a new form called poetry rather than scientific papers, one of the poets I felt it was essential for me to learn a great deal from was Tadeusz Rozewicz. And the book that I have in my hands now is one of the books I sought out for many years. It was out of print. It's called They Came to See a Poet, and it's published by Anvil. When I showed this to Tadeusz about 2 hours ago, he was rather surprised to find it in my hands. and asked me to select a kind of personal anthology of poems which talked to me as a British poet. I've selected 5 short poems. Unrecorded epistle. But Jesus stooped and wrote on the sand. Then again he stooped and wrote with his finger. Mother, they are so dim and simple. I have to perform marvels. I do such silly and futile things that you understand and forgive your son. I change water into wine, raise the dead, walk the seas. They are like children. One has always to show them something new. Just imagine. And when they approached, he covered and effaced the letters forever. They had very good spines, these anvil books. The return. I could never come to terms with some of my poems. Years pass. I can't come to terms with them. Yet I cannot disown them. They are bad, but they are mine. I gave them birth. They live away from me, indifferent and dead. But there will come a moment when they all will rush back to me. The successful and the failures, the crippled and the perfect, the ridiculed and the rejected. They will roll into one. Pigtail. When all the women in the transport had their heads shaved, 4 workmen with brooms made of birch twigs swept up and gathered up the hair. Behind clean glass, the stiff hair lies of those suffocated in gas chambers. There are pins and side combs in this hair. The hair is not shot through with light, is not parted by the breeze, is not touched by any hand or rain or lips. In huge chests, clouds of dry hair of those suffocated, and a faded plait, a pigtail, with a ribbon, pulled at school by naughty boys. Mars. A room, a family of 5 or 6. Someone's reading a book, someone's looking at photographs, someone remembers the war. Someone's falling asleep. Someone leaves. Someone's dying in the silence. Someone's drinking water. Someone's breaking bread. Tommy writes the letter A and draws a knight with a blue spur. Someone's getting ready to go to the moon. Someone's bought a rose, a bird, a fish. It's snowing. A bell tolls. Mars appears. His sword fills the room with fire. And lastly, of this anthology, forms. These forms, once so well behaved, obedient, always ready to receive the dead matter of poetry, frightened by fire and the smell of blood, have broken out and dispersed. They attack their creator, tear him apart, and drag him through endless streets that even silence does not penetrate outside.
And to finish the evening, Tadeusz and David will read two poems. The first one is called A Tree, and what might be of interest to you is that it was used for the poetry festival in Jerusalem last year for the cover, for the festival catalog.
Tree. Happy were the poets of old, the world like a tree, they like a child. What shall I hang upon the branch of a tree which has suffered a rain of steel? Happy were the poets of old around the tree, they dance like a child. What shall I hang upon the branch of a tree which is burnt and never will sing? Happy were the poets of old, beneath the oak, they sang like a child. But our tree creaked in the night with the weight of a corpse despised.
Drzewo. Byli szczęśliwi dawniejsi poeci. Świat był jak drzewo, a oni jak dzieci. Cóż ci powieszę na gałęzi drzewa, na które spadła żelazna ulewa? Byli szczęśliwi dawniejsi poeci, dokoła drzewa tańczyli jak dzieci. Cóż ci powieszę na gałęzi drzewa, które spłonęło, które nie zaśpiewa. Byli szczęśliwi dawniejsi poeci, pod liściem dębu śpiewali jak dzieci, a nasze drzewo w nocy zaskrzypiało i zwisło na nim pogardzone ciało.
Proofs. Death will not correct a single line of verse. She is no proofreader. She is no sympathetic lady editor. A bad metaphor is immortal. A shoddy poet who has died is a shoddy dead poet. A bore bores after death. A fool keeps up his foolish chatter from beyond the grave.
Korekta. Śmierć nie poprawi w zwrotce ani jednej linijki. To nie korektorka. To nie życzliwa pani redaktorka. Zła metafora jest nieśmiertelna. Kiepski poeta, który umarł, jest kiepskim, zmarłym poetą. Nudziarz po śmierci nudzi, głupiec z zagrobu jeszcze głupstwa gada.
Thank you very much, Tadeusz Różewicz.
Thank you.